So if we start off on that, so Jeremy, from your perspective, just saw a lot of great content, a lot of great titles that you guys have been working on. How's the cloud and Azure and different changing how you guys actually do business today at Jellyfish for rendering and post production?
Yeah, I mean we've been We've been looking at using cloud-based compute now for several years, and been working a lot with Joel over the past several years from the security aspect. But we're constantly asked to do things at higher resolutions. We do a lot of work for people like Netflix and Amazon Prime. And everything is now in Ultra HD or 4K. Now we're looking at HDR workflows and Dolby digital workflows and everything else. And the requirements keep going up and up and up. We're based in London in the UK. And we didn't want, there's limited space as to basically how much stuff you can actually kind of like cram into a server room and into so many racks. And the other thing, the rendering process for us is incredibly lumpy. And so we didn't want to have to basically over provision basically on the hope that we're going to get something in to come in behind that to fill that. Because obviously, it's very expensive buying physical servers, and even if you depreciate them over 3 to 5 years, that is still a risk. And so we operate at Jellyfish in a hybrid deployment, and we're able to basically use our current blade infrastructure, and then we use Azure when we need it. So just to give you guys an idea, I mean, our core quota now on Azure is about 40,000 cores, and we can burst up to that when we need it. And we actually have no plans to replace our existing hardware when it's end of life.
Right, so Bernie, from Microsoft and a beer, so how many people have ever heard of a beer and how it fits in? There's a few. So Bernie, why don't you just give a little introduction, because Microsoft actually acquired a beer earlier this year. Give a little discussion about what a beer is and what it brings to the table, especially around post-production and the kind of work we do.
Absolutely, thank you. So a beer systems was founded 10 years ago, essentially. We started out building hardware appliances for people who were outgrowing their data centers and moving physical gear to remote sites. That challenge there is once you've separated your compute from your storage, it becomes very difficult to render at a, shall we say, efficient pace. So we've developed a high-performance file system cache that allows you to extend your file access to a remote location. So once we've ported that actual software into clouds like Azure and Amazon and Google prior to our acquisition, customers were basically able to then stop buying hardware, like Jeremy said, and actually start renting it by the hour and not have to worry about the data management challenges that you would normally face when you're trying to ship data together with your compute. So essentially we had customers building their own private clouds 8-9 years ago. Then the public cloud became popular and people were able to overcome some of the, shall we say, psychological challenges of where you're going to put your data and who's going to safeguard it and everything. But essentially, once you've got your render images able to run inside the cloud, then you just have to feed data to them, and they can run, and you can essentially render at large scale, so about tens of thousands of cores, without actually having to manually copy data back and forth. So that was the main value add for all of our media and entertainment customers. Most of them were out in the West Coast, and then we moved to then the people in London who were facing the space crunch, essentially, not able to secure any more data center space in London. They started then procuring other solutions for moving their compute elsewhere, and that's kind of where we also fit in.
Yeah, I'll just maybe just quickly add to this. I completely agree with everything you said. I mean, for us, we were interested in building our own data center, because essentially that means we still have to buy it, we still have to rack it, and so, but we still own that. That means we have all that overhead and actually just running the stuff, and we don't want to do that. I mean, for our production, we want to hug that production curve as close to the line as possible before there was cloud and all the rest of it. I mean, this is going back 10 years, but we did a massive job. It was going to have multiple seasons of shows. Ends up season one flopped. Seasons 2 and 3 got canceled. So we now have all of this stuff sitting there that was supposed to be rendering, and it wasn't. And so, we want a way of working smarter and not harder, and the public cloud has changed that for us. So if we don't need a VM or if we don't need that compute, we simply dial it down. The other aspect that we've invested heavily in, and the VR and caching applies to this as well, is virtualized workstations. So it's not just rendering, but you can use that the Avir or software-defined storage and software-defined caching to feed other workloads. So we've been working really closely with a company called Teradici, and we're able to basically, in addition to render, do burstable workstations. So if we have, like, say, 20 freelancers and we need them for a month, we no longer need to buy 20 physical machines. So rendering is one aspect of that workflow, but there's many different scenarios where it's useful.
And I definitely agree. I mean, like you said, the rendering is the most kind of compute-intensive and the one that is the most variable in terms of demand. Who's asking for what at any given time? And like you said, things get canceled, plans change. And I even recall, you know, years ago, people out in California were shipping racks of render nodes up and down the West Coast because their friends down south needed them or their friends up north needed them, and they didn't have any use for them, so they could actually rent out their gear. That was essentially what clued all these people off into saying, okay, well, if we can do this, we can actually do it all in the cloud without having to move anything other than bits.
Yeah, in London, they were moving around in wheelbarrows.
yeah. So I guess you UPS it like that ship on the cloud. So Joel, give us a little bit of background on, you know, if you think about the workflows we're enabling, what you do at Microsoft and what you do around compliance and security and how it fits into this whole type of stuff we're talking about.
Sure. So, you know, security is an interesting topic because not only due to the fear and uncertainty and the complexity that can sometimes be introduced, but in particular with cloud, there is still in the production community a fair amount of hesitancy around using the cloud. I think most of the major studios have come around to the notion that, you know, cloud is the path to the future. As Jeremy mentioned, you know, now that that resolution and frame rate and of course forthcoming immersive technologies, all of these things are requiring more and more compute power, more and more storage. So the likelihood that, you know, especially a smaller production company is going to be able to house the kind of infrastructure that's necessary is just decreasing, you know, every day, every week. So the need is to find a mechanism that you know, this high-resolution, high-capacity content, and just think about what's going to happen. You know, we're all done with 4K almost, and now it's going to be moving to 8K. That, you know, that need for capacity and the need to be able to support studios doing, you know, doing this content is only going to increase. So when you look at, you know, what that end-to-end scenario, you know, starting from the pre-visualization that might be done on a tablet or, you know, some other kind of mobile device. I've seen AR experiences where they can hold the tablet up or even, you know, do it in a headset, and they can see, you know, all the virtual rigging and camera placement and objects that are going to be in the scene before anything even gets rendered. So you have, you know, things that you know, that can be driven from the cloud on the device side, because you can have that, like Jeremy said, you can have the workstation virtualization to feed into that device. Take that content directly into, you know, into your modeling software, and then start doing your VFX and feed it into editing, and then ultimately play it out to that device anywhere. So the workflow really starts to go end to end in the cloud. You know, Microsoft being uniquely positioned to have, you know, devices at both ends, the cloud infrastructure in the middle. And so coming back around to the security, kind of a long-winded path. The studios have essentially signed off on the notion of having their content in the cloud, but that message is still trying to get out there. Smaller production companies are very fearful because, you know, even though the studios have enabled it, they don't know how to configure it. So, you know, that's why we're working with the majors, working with CDSA and NPAA through the Trusted Partner Network to show how you can do these deployments in a secure fashion. And you know, not to show them, but give the actual guidance on how it works. So yeah, sorry, that was a very, really long way to talk about. You asked a big question.
I did. So and I guess the question I have too is, you think about today, it sounds like we're at the leading edge of people starting to think about this. Where do you guys see the, you know, production companies going the next, you know, 18 months, 2 years, 3 years? Where are we going to go from a technology standpoint where we are today to where are we going to see then? And what are some key drivers around that, really doing that change, digital transformation?
I'll take a stab at it.
Yeah.
I mean, from the storage perspective, because that's my area of expertise and I think a larger piece of the production kind of puzzle. I think, like Jeremy said, more and more things are going to kind of start gravitating. People started with rendering because it was, quote unquote, the most intensive process that they could satisfy the needs for in the cloud. So they went with that, but now people are going to start moving, maybe like you said, the artist workstation is going to move up into the cloud. So now you're not moving data back and forth constantly, and then perhaps, you know, stuff like compositing and post-production and all that further on is going to also start moving up into the cloud instead of having to, you know, develop content on premises with your artists, push it up to the cloud to do one thing, pull it back down to do another, and then push it back. I think the whole idea of moving data is going to you know, compress and really just, you're just going to be doing it again. Yeah, that's my impression, but.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just quickly add to that. Like, we've now using like a software-defined storage strategy. In the UK, we're using a company called Pixiv Media. And this stuff, it just runs on commodity hardware. You know, we've, like all of the vendor locked-in hardware that we used to have is gone away. By us doing that, it opens up a tremendous amount of opportunity. So say, for example, once it's in the cloud, it opens up, like say, virtualized workstations via people like Teradici. It opens up machine learning because we have terabytes of data. Basically, we could be using like all of the AI and the machine learning stuff that Azure offers now. We can actually start mining that dark data. We can do inventory our dark data. We can do stuff that we just couldn't do before. And the thing is, so for us to build that out internally, we just couldn't do that because we just don't have the resource that Azure does in our case. And I think that it's really exciting times because if you're like a new facility, like a new post-production or animation company, you all of a sudden don't have to have like say $1 million or $500,000 or whatever it is to buy all this stuff up front. You can simply use what you want when you want it, and then when you're done for it, then you stop paying for it. And so it's going to allow this a much greater amount of agility and flexibility than what this industry has been currently seeing. And I mean, for us, it's completely changed the way that we work. So some of the stuff that you saw on that reel, there's no way that we could have actually delivered that on time for the money that we did without using the cloud. It's just not going to happen. So, and all of a sudden we get a call, you know, say, you know, can we actually have our old deliveries 2 weeks early, you know, from one of our clients? And all of a sudden we can say, yeah, sure. Basically, as long as the way that we do is that we basically, okay, yeah, you can, it's going to charge X amount to get the rendering done faster just to pay for all the compute. But if they're happy to pay that, then we just crank up the dial. And then when it's done, then we just collapse it down. And so it's really allowing really flexible workflows compared to what we've been able to do previously. And it's really exciting stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, coming from the Avere side, you know, we started out selling our solution to the majors. And then, as soon as the cloud stuff started taking place, the smaller studios, the 10-man, 15, 20-man VFX shops now had the capabilities of spinning up 20, 30, 40,000 core render farms, which they would never have the money for to do before that. So they actually now became competitive in the way that they could bid on jobs, and they could actually deliver stuff that they didn't have capabilities for earlier.
Yeah, like the raw grunt is now sort of, it's really down to your workflow and your pipeline and the staff that you hire. And really, if you have those, in a relationship, obviously, with the right people. But if you have those key things in place, there's really no job you can't go after. Like I was reading, I think it was on the Avere site, like a few months ago, there's a small company in Louisiana or something, we spun 70,000 cores or something. This is like in the middle of Louisiana or something.
Yeah, question.
So, apologies, but I'm going to throw the grenade, as everyone knows that I like to do. We have talked a tremendous amount about the whys and the whats. And anyone in this room is not going to question any of the whats. I think it's pretty straightforward. Unfortunately, the write-up in the book is about the how. And I really want to twist the conversation and make a really hard left turn and say, that's great, we get the whys and the whats, or the hows and the whats. We want the hows. Because we've got all these challenges in front of us. Things like, you talk about spooling up 70,000 cores or whatever it is. How do you deal with plugins? How do you deal with fonts? How do you deal with management of that? If you're in a hybrid cloud, how does the system determine when should I spool up 70,000? Or do I do it on-prem or off? All the hows that go into this, I think a lot of people in this room have wondered more about the hows than the whats and the whys. Because the whats and the whys are kind of down.
Yeah, I can update that. Because we are doing it. So when we went to the cloud, we wanted to naturally extend our infrastructure. We didn't want to change the way that we work. We didn't want to We don't want to basically have like two different deployments, if that makes sense. We just want to take our current infrastructure and then go to the cloud, period. And we're running a hybrid model. And so some of the things that we've done and that we're doing, we're looking at things like cut down like network latency. You know, we're looking at services like Express from Microsoft. We're looking at software-defined firewalls that has the throughput to keep the jitter in the network latency low. We've also really been using like the Azure Batch Service to basically use custom-enabled VMs that have a lot of those plugins there ready to go. So basically, when I hit go, it's going to render with the right version of the plugin and the right everything. And now, part of the reason why we went with Microsoft, because they have like a lot of the enterprise agreements in place that deal with the licensing of certain plugins. So, or on a VRAY, for example, like so, if I spin up, like say, 1,000 cores, I can get an Arnold license per minute for what I'm rendering. And so a lot of this, if you saw that real, was rendered in Arnold. Now, I could go into the how for hours. If you want to chat after, I'm more than happy to, but we put a lot of work into this, but I mean, it definitely does work.
You know, building on actually a fair amount of the work that Jellyfish did, there was one of the major studios that we, you know, can't actually name by name, we use, there's a security outfit called Independent Security Evaluators, and they do a lot of work for all of the majors. One of the things that they do as part of their assessments is they create the documentation on, specifically on how to configure. Now, a lot of this is, of course, focused around, how do you configure it in a secure context? So if you're going to be working on, on Star Wars, Disney's obviously very concerned about that stuff not leaking. So the guidance shows, not just the services that need to be used, but also providing scripts on how to get up and running. We also have partners, so like Jeremy mentioned, Autodesk and V-Ray and others, but there's another up-and-comer called the Nimble Collective. And particularly on licensing, what they've done is they create kind of a render environment in a box. And so they can manage bringing up the permit of licensing, not just on the environment tools, but also on in working with the people, like you said, who do the plugins. So that when you've got a specific project, you can go in, you can provision your environment, you can add users to it. You might be in Nepal, they could be in Louisiana, it could be anywhere. They can log in, they can use the resources, and then when they're all done, you can boot them out of the system and you retain your content within your subscription. So this way you're bringing users to the data instead of sending data to the users. So the mechanisms are starting to develop where the how of building what's fairly complex infrastructure is starting to be simplified, and over time you'll see more things like resource management templates from us, tools like Nimble Collective, services like what Jellyfish provides to help get organizations who are new to the cloud onboarded that much faster.
Now, I'll just quickly add to that, there's one another question about the how. So basically, we have an internal render manager that we've been working, and this manages all of our stuff on-premise, all of our Dell and HP Blades and so forth. But we've been working with the lead developers as well as integrating the batch service natively into that package. And so basically, from an artist's perspective or from a producer's perspective, they have a single pane of glass. And if they want more render power, usually managed by the head producer, you literally type in a number, and through the Azure SDK and APIs and all that sort of stuff, we will then provision VMs on demand. And again, we put a lot of work into this, and there's a lot that we can go into under the how, but those are just some of the ideas. And so an artist at Jellyfish, they actually don't know if they're rendering on-prem or in the cloud, and they just don't care. They just want to get the rendering done. And so that is basically some of the stuff that we're doing around the how. And we've been working closely with like all the telcos, again, as I was saying before, to have not necessarily lots of bandwidth, but high quality bandwidth. So low jitter, low latency. And we've been doing tests, on the Azure VPN endpoints and so forth and so forth and so forth. And there's a lot of moving parts to it, but basically once you have all of the components together, we feel it makes for a very, very powerful combination. And the storage is one aspect, the software license is another, the single pane of glass for like the render manager is another, and that's just for rendering. The guys from Teradici, they've got their products, and you know, as well that integrates into this whole solution. So, I mean, that is definitely part of the how, if that makes sense.
Yeah, what's interesting too is I know there's a, I think it was at the Microsoft Build Conference, there's a great session, I know it's on YouTube, if you shoot me an email, I'll send it to you. It's about an hour and a half that really goes into this. They're actually talking to one of our other partners, Conductor. And they actually go into, and what's interesting is these price points. So you have the technology, but how do you make these decisions? And they give you some examples where you have to balance cost with power. So, hey, here's an 8-core, 16 different configurations. Look at render times and per minute charges. You know, what's the sweet spot that you want? Will you pay $50 more for a 40-minute increase? Or do you, you know, that's those are the type of the slider things that you can actually adjust for, basing to deliver out there. So,
yeah, the render orchestration tools, I've been like RenderWise from Jellyfish, or you could use a RenderMan tractor from Pixar or Conductor or World Render. Oh, sorry? Deadline? Yeah, which is also supported within Azure. So, you know, again, the tools are there, and you know, as we form more partnerships and we strengthen the ones that we have as far as the integration that they provide and you know, fold them into our secure workflows, you know, a lot of these things become a lot more turnkey. And you know, we're also working with other small production or smaller production companies in order to you know, create more of a studio in box where you can provision an entire environment that will have all of the different components for pre and post production. So that as you're going from you know, early concept art through your visualization and your VFX creation to your editorial compositing and so forth, that you know, everything can flow seamlessly. And you won't have to do that work to create that and to provision it because it'll just be, you know, click this on and you can, you know, you can go to it. We're not there yet,
licensing is your kicker. The problem is this is all a great theory, but the reality is where the rubber meets the road when you talk about provisioning a graphics workstation in the cloud, the gotcha is licensing. Go try to talk to the foundries and say, you know, I want to do X number of licenses for this font, or go talk to Sapphire and those guys. Like, this is my big question back to you guys and saying, this is great nirvana, but how do we
It's a tough problem, licensing in particular, because you know, historically, all of these tools that you all have been using were designed for a single workstation. So now we're asking them to completely change their licensing model into a capacity model. So, you know, and they're just simply not architected to do it. Folks like Nimble are working on that because you know, these plug-in vendors, you know, even though there's going to be some complexity for them to retool for this, they know that they have to. You know, on the you know, on one side, if you're doing something like After Effects and using plugins in that, you know, chances are that you're doing that on a workstation, even if it's a virtualized one in the cloud. So, you know, as long as the license itself is transportable, and it isn't always, we know there's a license key problem, particularly with things like the physical iLock, that creates some problems. But you know, even the iLock guys are moving their stuff. You know, stuff into the cloud so that that license management can occur. But there is a bit of either a steep on-ramp or a long tail, depending on which side you're looking at, to get these guys on board. And certainly, the more that all of you push on that, you know, if you want us to use your stuff, you need to have a capacity model. Faster they are going to you know, figure out how to do that. And you know, so I think it's both of us pushing on that to make sure that development happens.
Yeah. So Jeremy, could you maybe go through your tool set that you guys use? Because I know you're using multiple tools. That might give everyone a perspective about the suite of tools and vendors and products that you're using.
Yeah, I mean, so we use all the Autodesk stuff. And the Autodesk stuff, you know, the license agreements that Microsoft have in place for that are great. So, you know, you spin up a VM. If you want to buy a license, you can get that via Batch and Max as well. Arnold and V-Ray, I mean, I know like a lot of the other vendors, like say for example, we use a lot of press from the Foundry, they make things like Nuke, Mari, and they don't get licensing. I mean, they're starting to do their own service and basically pay for a Nuke license by the minute. And you know, and I'm talking to them quite often in London to see if basically can we have that license and just extend that on down on a metered thing. So basically, if you want a copy of Nuke, you pay for that by the minute, you can run wherever you want. And so they are definitely aware of that. They're not closed-minded, they just want to come up with their own strategy, if that makes sense. Right. I mean, but it is. I mean, we also use things like Adobe, you know, a lot of the Creative Suite stuff. And I mean, you know, we have like Adobe Creative Cloud for Teams. Now, Adobe's not there yet on doing like per minute billing, but I wouldn't say that it's not impossible to conceive that via someone like.
I actually spent a lot of time with Adobe on getting the EULA for that. So I actually discussed it, like, do you want to use Premiere inside of Azure? So if you actually own a Creative Cloud license for a workstation, you can actually have it. Now, and, you know, even folks like Avid as well, Avid is putting their models in. So what you're seeing is if you have these licenses that are tied to, you know, that you actually own, those are being, you're seeing the portability up to, you know, configurations such as Azure. But also what you're seeing is that once again, this pressure, you're seeing, you know, what we have today with Azure, with Autodesk and V-Ray, where you're getting the permitted billing, you're seeing everyone else in the editing software thinking about this. So I think, I'm trying to think what was announced at NAB, but you're seeing these on demand from these, you know, editing suites that are actually available per minute, so you're not actually owning. So think about the process you have today where you go and rent workstations and that from somebody. Now you're just going to see that per minute in the cloud with the, you know, the zero client. So once again, early days, there's a lot of pushing. The more customers that tell these guys they need it, the more that you're going to see changing.
And I'll just quickly, from a studio's perspective, I mean, I do agree with you. The licensing is a big issue. But really, the technology is done. It's sorted. Basically, it technically works. But the thing that's holding back things now is these, you know, the users and licensing and stuff. There are some vendors that are saying, you know, they are adopting the cloud market, but I'll say from our perspective is that we would rather use someone's products that is open to using cloud-based licensing rather than something that's not, because it's going to give us like a lot of flexibility. So say for example, if there's some fancy new renderer that come out and they would absolutely refuse to do cloud licensing, guess what? I don't care how good it is, we're not going to use it, because obviously we want the agility and flexibility. And you know, thankfully Autodesk see that, and as well as V-Ray. And so, I mean, when I talk to other software vendors, it's kind of like, guys, this is the way that we work, this is the way that post-production in general is going to work, and so do you want to get on board or not? Before we start basically building a project pipeline around a certain project, we'll kind of do like an audit to see, well, where are these vendors going to be going in the future as far as like the licensing terms goes, because from our perspective, I mean, we've done the virtualized workstation, we've done the rendering in the cloud, we've done multiple geographical locations, and I'm happy to go into the how more detail and app if you want to grab a coffee or something. But the licensing is the biggest thing. But I think some of the big software vendors, they're finally getting around that, like SaaS and software as a service. I mean, it's going to be like the future for a lot of industries.
Yeah, and I think the bigger software companies, they already get it. The push is going to have to be on you know, the 2 to 4 person shops that are creating those plugins that are going to be the biggest challenge.
Have you talked to any of the foundries? Because talk about large, they're about as big as they get. So I'm curious how you're handling that.
Slowly, you know, we have the conversations. There are, you know, the foundry in particular is they're a bit of a tough nut to crack, but. You know, I don't want to speak for them, but at some point, I think they're going to have to evaluate their model.
And this is maybe more of a reason for like kind of a hybrid approach as well. So say, for example, I mean, if your part of your workflow is absolutely locked to one software vendor and they will not do cloud licensing, maybe then that part of your production stays on-prem. And maybe it stays local. And basically for the other parts of the production, like say, for example, rendering with Arnold, for example, then you take that to the public cloud, and then basically you do all your founder stuff on-premise. If they are absolutely not going to play ball, then maybe that's a potential solution. And we operate in a hybrid. Well, so just to let you know, I mean, we do practically all of our 2D stuff on-premise, you know, today. And then we go to the cloud for what the cloud best assists them for, and we do a ton of 3D rendering and 3D compute and GPU compute in the cloud. And so, which doesn't require any foundry licensing. So the sooner that, you know, but the foundry, they now have the cloud, their own cloud offering as well. I'm meeting the guys next week. So, I mean, it's...
Sorry, I was going for foundry.
Oh, sorry, different.
There's no foundry will come around.
I guess one thing too is as we're talking about these workflows, what's the role of networking So when you think about, you know, from a caching standpoint of a Veer, how does networking take into account how you need to set up, you know, your overall configuration in the short term, or maybe even looking down the road a couple of years? How does 5G factor in?
Well, yeah, I think you know, deploying the file system cache in the cloud, so that enabling you to do the rendering, you're obviously going to need some sort of networking that could be back to your on-premises infrastructure. Typically, people are going express route. I mean, you can even do VPNs over the internet. Some people do that, depending on what their budgets are like. But essentially, once you establish routed network connectivity between the Azure VNet and your on-premises data storage, you can basically kick things off and take and replicate the exact file system that you see on-premises is visible then in the cloud. And then you just kick off your renders, point them at your caching layer, and they read all the data in, form the computing for, you know, hours, days, maybe even weeks. And then as the output frames are being written out, those just get percolated back to your on-premises infrastructure so that your artists and everyone can see the results, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, I think 5G is really exciting, but from a virtualized workstations perspective, because all of a sudden I can be out in the middle of a field and access basically like a PC over IP or an EG client from a mobile home. It's pretty cool.
So when you think about these speeds, Bernie, what type of speeds do you see people usually looking at? I mean, is everyone going to go for, you know, are we looking at 1 gig connections, 10 gig connections? They start laying these things in, looking at the cost. Is it a balance? How do you figure that stuff out?
I mean, so typically for rendering, luckily it's a highly cacheable workflow. So you're not actually, once you have a cache in place, you're not beating up that link that goes between your on-premises data center and the cloud, for example. But there's still, you know, most people go with a gigabit connection and then the monitor. You know, sometimes they'll get, you know, they'll only use 50% of their links even on a gigabit, and they're pushing 5 gigabytes a second in the cloud of reads while they're running renders. Yeah. So it really depends on what the scale is, how many shots you're working on, how different those shots are, how large the working set is. These are all types of considerations that you take into place when you're deciding what kind of networking activity you and we've actually even had people do like cable modems and like, I mean, there's I mean, you know, from the very small shops that don't have a lot of infrastructure even right. in their data center today, they want to spin up massive stuff in the cloud and they don't need to ship a lot of data back and forth. So there's certainly, I mean, the caching alleviates the need for a link, but now if you're talking, you know, other types of workflows and remote desktops and things like that, I mean, your bandwidth needs are going to increase, and like you said, the jitter requirements are going to.
Well, and one of the other benefits you have on the storage side, and then you fold, you know, the secure access into that, is that, like you said, once those assets are in the cloud, if you need other artists to work on that, then you provision that access for them, and they can come in and they can use those resources. So, you know, even further, the need for that network bandwidth is reduced because at that point you're just pushing pixels back and forth. You're not pushing, you know, multi-terabyte files.
And you're not dealing with stuff flying around in Dropbox and SD cards and everything else.
No.
Well, yeah. Like Jeremy said, you want to bring the users to the data instead of bringing the data to the users. Right?
You want it to be absolutely seamless. So, say for example, if you have a MIFI, you don't want to be going through relinking textures and Alembic caches and FBX. Like, you just want it to work.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that software-defined storage and basically things like your Veer cache provide.
Yeah, because I guess that also has another thing too, because it's just a different thought process where, I know we were talking about licensing for rendering time and VMs, but also, you know, when you start thinking about public cloud, you have to pay for everything leaving. So I guess another way to do the cost analysis too is, what are the egress costs? So when you think about your modeling of how you have to model out your all-up costs, it's just not the, you know, it's the rendering time, it's the VM cost, it's maybe some egress, depending on how you want to factor all that in for the.
Yeah, you definitely want to architect first. You know, understand the assets that you're using, where they're going to go, who's going to access it, and then, you know, start looking at how many cores are going to be needed, and, you know, what the particular software tools are, and so on. Even with cloud, that planning ahead of time is still going to be very important, just as if you were doing on-premises.
Right. So, any other questions from the audience? We still got some more time here, so I just want to make sure we catch some questions if anyone has any questions around any of these.
I guess we'll just keep going.
Yeah, keep on going.
Well, I think one additional thing, you know, you're talking about cost,
yeah.
Right? That is a really huge component of what people are trying to, you know, turn back on, essentially. And software-defined storage and, you know, high-performance network connectivity and all that kind of stuff allows you to basically chase the cheapest compute. right? So every region has a price for certain types of compute resources, and they're different, believe it or not, right? I mean, you know, space in Southern California is expensive, power is expensive, cooling is expensive, so the VMs are more expensive there. But what if you could just go render in Iceland, right? Or wherever the power is cheap and the compute is cheap.
For us, basically, we can use euros or sterling pound. So there's different exchange rates.
Yeah, and I think also when you factor that in too, when you look at geographical, if you have certain things, you usually don't think of, hey, if you're German, do we have a German data center, things like that. But actually seeing Azure having all those regions around the world, 52 or 4 now, something like that, I keep changing.
42 live regions around the world. But one of the advantages to that is that you don't, once you have that data in the cloud, if you need to get it to another region around the world, you're going over our backbone. And that allows you to seamlessly replicate so that instead of having somebody, I've got a production partner right now who all their animators in Nepal. So they want to have that locality of reference, have the assets there, perhaps in one of our India data centers, but then be able to bring it back for the studio to review here. And so they can, they can kind of silently in the background replicate that data in between regions. Gives them not only the redundancy, but it also gives them the capability, of having more people access it at lower latencies from a local region.
Yeah, I would say it's just not even this workflow. I mean, we're working with, one of our big partners in this area is Avid, from a not only just an editing standpoint, but just from a media asset management, where we're looking at, think about Avid's, you have 4, 5, 10 locations around the world using the cloud, moving things in between that. It takes a difference. So you're getting rid of your own comms and just using Azure comms with maybe an ExpressRail connection into your local offices. So
yeah, like I'll just say, it's just changed the way we work. Completely, we're bidding on jobs we just, I know we would have been able to do, and we can work in multiple different geographical locations. Property in central London is extortionately expensive, and so previously that's why we're having 50 animators come to one of the most expensive cities in the world just to do what they could anywhere else, in the country. And so it's just really completely changed our approach to how we take on certain projects.
Right. So with that, it looks like we're up again. Any other questions? If there's no questions, we'll go ahead and wrap this up. And these guys will be around for a little while, and we're going into a break. There's people down here as well as stuff upstairs as well from a vendor standpoint. So thanks for joining us for this panel. Our next session will be a keynote from Mark Miller from Microsoft about what Microsoft can do for content creators. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.